I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Lee, have you looked at the minutes for March 1st?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes for March 1st.
Representative Lee moves the minutes for March 1st, 2023. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Members and the audience, we're going to be moving things around a little bit. So first up is going to be House File 2168, Representative Hemmingson Yeager. And then we are going to hear the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources budget presentation. And then we will hear House File 81. And then we will end with House File 1945, the Reinvest in Minnesota bill. So that's the schedule. We are going to try to keep on schedule because I know that the minority has places to go, people to see. So we're going to try to keep moving. So Representative Hemmingson Yeager, you could come forward. Representative Jordan, would you like to move Representative Hemmingson Yeager's bill? We're laying this one over. Yeah.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan moves that House Bill 2168 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Hemmingson Yeager, to your bill.
Great, thank you. So I'm Representative Amanda Hemmingson Yeager. Thank you so much for the time to present this bill today and for your attention. I'm excited about this bill because my dad was actually career DNR, mostly in trails and waterways, but he actually did some prescribed burns, and he would actually be he would run crews out west to do wildfire containment and management. So very excited, kind of hits close to home. In a nutshell, this bill basically appropriates money to make sure that recommendations that were in a 2017 DNR legislative report are implemented. I have a couple of testifiers to keep things concise and short and sweet. I would like to have them come up.
So first up is Matt Grave, Nature Conservancy, Minnesota Prescribed Fire Council. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Matt Gravy. Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and committee members. My name is Matt Gravy. I traveled here today from Little Falls to testify in support of House File 2168 to speak on behalf of the Minnesota Prescribed Fire Council. The council is a volunteer coalition of prescribed fire practitioners and allies, including representatives from the Minnesota DNR, working together to conserve, protect, and expand the safe use of prescribed fire across the state. In my day job, I'm a fire manager for the Nature Conservancy, and I have worked in fire management for 24 years, 16 of those here in Minnesota. I'm in a unique position to understand this issue because I am a nationally certified prescribed fire burn boss, but I work for a non-governmental organization, and I help private landowners with prescribed burns. I currently serve on the Prescribed Fire and Fuels Working Team of the Minnesota Incident Command System. I've been involved with the Minnesota Prescribed Fire Council since its formation, and I was one of many non-agency representatives that contributed to the Prescribed Burn Requirements Report prepared by the DNR and submitted to the legislature in January of 2017. Today I'm here as a member of the council's leadership team. The vision of the council is a collaborative all-hands, all-lands approach to prescribed fire planning, implementation, and monitoring that serves Minnesota's diverse ownerships and jurisdictions. The council believes prescribed fire is the only process that can fully maintain and restore the ecological health and cultural values of Minnesota's forests, prairies, while lessening the risk of catastrophic wildfires. House File 2168 will advance a critical first step to grow Minnesota's prescribed fire community while making prescribed fire more accessible, equitable, and inclusive. There are people in Minnesota that already burn their lands, but do not have access to the training that can make their efforts safer. The proper thing to do is to provide training and certification to all parties who wish to use prescribed fire on their lands in order to make the use of fire in Minnesota as safe as possible. This bill is an opportunity for Minnesota to invest in prescribed fire training and certification for NGO and private fire practitioners. Bill language was developed directly from the recommendations in pages 10 through 12 of the 2017 Prescribed Burn Report provided to you as supplemental material, with a $300,000 appropriation amount recommended by the council's DNR representative. A small investment now in diversifying and growing Minnesota's prescribed fire workforce will have great dividends long-term for the landscapes, waters, and people of our state. The funding provided through this bill will help build a network of certified prescribed fire practitioners who know how to use fire safely on their lands. The Minnesota Prescribed Fire Council desires to be an active partner with the DNR in implementing the provisions of this bill and will support the DNR with subject matter expertise, qualified trainers, certified burner course development and course delivery, public education and outreach. Because the DNR is the state agency responsible for regulating open burning, including prescribed fire, the council itself is not authorized to carry out any of the provisions of this bill or the actions recommended in the 2017 legislative report. Prescribed fire certification systems, such as the one proposed here, are already in place in 20 other states, with 19 of those being implemented by the state agency responsible for wildfire response. Simply put, this work must be prioritized by the DNR and supported by the council. This bill enables the DNR to pursue recommendations they made in the 2017 Prescribed Burn Requirements Report and to partner with the council and its affiliates to expand the strategic use of fire. Planned professional application of prescribed fire at the right place and time is a safe, effective, and time-tested process. Unfortunately, fire as a management tool was sidelined for the last 110 years as we suppressed wildfire. Fire suppression was intended to keep people and communities safe, but a century later has resulted in the opposite. Today we face degraded grasslands and savannas, unprecedented forest density, dangerous fuel loads, and stressed forests impacted by insects and disease and vulnerable to climate change. All of this creates a current condition where wildfires are more likely to burn hot, fast, and out of control, putting our communities, livelihoods, and natural resources at great risk. Minnesota is not immune to destructive wildfires, and many of the biggest fires in our history happen in iconic parts of the state like our northern forests, which threaten both residential and tourist destinations in addition to cultural and natural resources. Proactive investment in using more prescribed fire to prevent wildfires is necessary as Minnesota transitions to a warmer and more drought-prone climate. As climate change makes its presence further known in Minnesota, we are in a race to catch up after a century of outdated and ill-informed fire policy. The race involves simultaneously preventing catastrophic wildfires and implementing prescribed fires to improve the health of our forests, savannas, and prairies and reduce the risk of wildfires. We must work together as a community, federal, state, and tribal governments, alongside NGOs and private landowners to be successful. We need to expand accessibility to training to safely accomplish our goals. This bill is the first step in providing that training and certification to both reinforce the reliability of existing burning private burners and create an accessible, intelligible path for new people to join that community, which will better ensure safe use of this important land management tool throughout Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon.
Thank you. Patty Thielen, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair, members. Thank you for having me here. I'm Patty Thielen. I am the Forestry Division Director for the Department of Natural Resources. The Department of Natural Resources has responsibilities for a number of wildfire-related activities in Minnesota, including wildfire prevention, pre-suppression, or making sure that we have the resources available to suppress wildfires, and then wildfire suppression. We also know prescribed fire has an important role and is an important tool in management on the landscape in Minnesota. DNR desires to work with prescribed burners to establish and maintain safe and effective methods to keep prescribed fire as a management tool in Minnesota. The 2017 Prescribed Burn Requirements Report was developed by the DNR and was a key step in moving this effort forward. The report outlined a number of steps to establish a certified prescribed burner qualification for non-agency prescribed fire practitioners, to provide access to burning permits for these certified prescribed burners, and to establish a prescribed fire council to oversee the certification and training. No funding was appropriated to accomplish the tasks in this report at the time. So far, the DNR has continued to participate on the Prescribed Burning Council's steering committee and has been working to find ways to expedite burning permits for certified prescribed burners. The DNR wants to fulfill the remaining report recommendations, but there's a few more pieces that need to come into place before DNR can take its steps, namely the establishment of the Prescribed Fire Council as its own legal entity. To date, the Minnesota Prescribed Fire Council has not been formally or legally established and is looking to DNR to further the establishment of the Prescribed Fire Program in Minnesota on behalf of private practitioners. And this is outside of the DNR's authority. We do desire to continue working with partners to officially establish a Minnesota Prescribed Fire Council. Recent conversations with the University of Minnesota and the Prescribed Fire Council members have been very successful and promising. DNR acknowledges funding will be needed to carry this out and provide ongoing support for prescribed fire. Currently, there's no authorized funding for prescribed fire certification in our budget. A prescribed burn certification training program for maintenance of license is needed. DNR has fire experts that can be called on to help deliver and develop this training, but a coordinating entity and likely an actual program coordinator is needed. DNR would like to continue working with partners, the Prescribed Fire Council, and the bill author to establish legislation to make this a success.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Members, any questions? Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, any closing comments?
Yeah, I would just again like to say my thanks as the DNR kind of mentioned, as well as Mr. Gravy. You know, prescribed burns are actually a very effective wildlife and vegetative management tool. I can even tell you, talking to my dad, like today's fires, because we have not had the preventative approach, they're burning faster and they're burning hotter. That puts our landscapes, our property, and our people at risk. So the ability to have some good prevention and some good training to make sure everybody stays safe and keeps the space around them safe is important. I am continuing to work in collaboration with the DNR and with the Minnesota Prescribed Fire Council to make sure that this is successfully implemented. So thanks again.
Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 2168 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you. Next up, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources budget presentation. Commissioner Stroman, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, welcome to the committee. And you have Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer and Chief Financial Officer Mary Robeson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to try to take charge of the technology here, which could be dangerous. Okay, I think I figured it out. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, hello, I'm Sarah Stroman. I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And as the chair said, with me today, our assistant commissioner, Bob Meyer, and our chief financial officer, Mary Robeson. And we are thrilled to be here today to present an overview of the Department of Natural Resources fiscal year 24-25 biennial budget as recommended by Governor Walz. I will also note that we have either our division directors or deputy division directors here today in the audience. So if there are questions specifically related to any of the division initiatives or division budgets, they can help answer them. So the governor's One Minnesota budget includes $287.4 million in investments for 24-25. These investments focus on connecting people to the outdoors, positioning Minnesota as a leader in mitigating and adapting to climate change, and helping us manage natural resource issues proactively rather than reactively, and addressing DNR's operational needs. These recommendations include one-time investments, increases in annual investments, as well as increases in fees that benefit Minnesota's environment, our economy, and contribute to the high quality of life throughout the state. What our presentation aims to do here this afternoon is just give you a quick context to how we approached this year's budget request, which is a little bit different than in previous years. We want to give you an overview of the specific recommendations in the budget and those change items in those four priority categories, and then answer any questions you might have. So to start with a little bit of context, one of the things that we have worked hard over the last 4 years during my time as commissioner has been really to deepen and expand our strategic planning work. And we worked with this budget request specifically to make sure that the governor's budget recommendations were reflective of our agency's strategic priorities and informed by long-term thinking in addition to the parameters of biennial budget planning. And so I know some of you are familiar with our 10-year capital asset needs report. That's how we plan on a 10-year look-ahead basis the needs we have on our capital assets. We also just recently published our For the Outdoors initiative, which is something we started in 2021. It was a collaborative transformational effort with Minnesotans of diverse backgrounds across the state. And the goal was to identify what Minnesotans value for the future of conservation and outdoor recreation, and then the steps that we can collectively work on to reach that future. And so there are things, the four areas recommended in this report are optimizing existing funds, examining the use and application of fees, examining direct support, and finally exploring avenues for sustainable operating budget long term. And so the governor's budget for fiscal years 24 and 25, the recommendations really embrace this long term strategic look and the recommendations in that For the Outdoors report. Before we go into the specifics of the request for this year, just wanted to share a snapshot of what our budget currently looks like by fund. Our budget at DNR is really a complex mix of many funds, many of those funds dedicated. And so one of the things that you'll note here is despite the fact that we have a large budget, $1.3 billion in the current biennium, most of these funds that are shown on this wheel here are dedicated funds. And so we have relatively little funding flexibility within the funds that we manage. And one of the other things you'll notice is that almost half or about only 25% of our funding comes from the general fund. That's that blue slice. Almost half of that 25% is either passed through to other entities or is designated to firefighting activities. So the pass through would be things like our payments to tribes for treaty agreements, payments to counties for PILT payments, those kinds of things, and then the fire activities. So when you start to notice or think about that, the amount of general fund that actually goes to DNR activities on the ground is quite small. You'll also see on the left side of the pie chart legacy funds, including the Outdoor Heritage, the Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails Legacy Fund, as well as the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund. If you take those constitutionally dedicated funds, much of which we compete for in a competitive process, that's about another 23% of our DNR budget. So very comparable to what we get in general fund dollars are actually constitutionally dedicated dollars and do not support operations. And then you can see the other major funds here as well, including Game and Fish Fund and other funds. So I'm going to do a quick overview of the divisions, the seven divisions, and their funding sources. I know we didn't get a chance to do an agency overview in this committee, and I'm not going to go into details of the work of each of these committees. You have it on the slide. But the point we want to make here is that each of our divisions is funded with a slightly different mix of funding. And so here we have our Parks and Trails division, the general fund, the state park account, and the state parks lottery in lieu account in the natural resources fund are the most significant sources of funding for this division. We also, of course, have the Parks and Trails legacy dollars and environmental trust fund, again, which cannot be used for operational activities. In Fish and Wildlife, there's a diverse mix of funding here too, but the thing you will notice in contrast to Parks and Trails is there is almost no general fund support. Fish and Wildlife only has about 2% of general fund to support the division's work, and all of that is entirely dedicated legislatively to chronic wasting disease monitoring and surveillance work. The largest source of funding for Fish and Wildlife is the Game and Fish Fund, which is made up of federal funds as well as our fishing and hunting license dollars. Forestry Division, the general fund largely supports forest management funding and fire suppression, as I mentioned before, and then along with our forest our forest management investment account and the heritage enhancement account. Ecological and water resources, probably the most diverse mix of funding and the most balanced that you will see. General fund dollars here support aquatic invasive species work, water protection work, and the like. And then our enforcement division is funded also by mostly dedicated funds, with the largest portion being out of the Game and Fish Fund. There are seven accounts within the Natural Resources Fund that go to our enforcement division. So that's specifically for if the funding is coming from the motorized vehicle accounts, then that's for enforcement on motorized vehicles. If it's coming from water rec account, it would be for water-based enforcement. And around 18% is general fund. $3 million of that is dedicated to AIS enforcement. Lands and Minerals is our smallest division, and the majority of the funding that makes up their funding is also dedicated funding. General fund is primarily dedicated to minerals management activities such as reclamation, research, and evaluation. And then our operations support, this is where we fund operations across the department, such as communications, human resources, our legal, our fiscal services, as well as fleet and building and our leadership. These activities are paid for through internal billings from the divisions, and so that's why you see that mostly funded out of the special revenue. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and members, that was a very quick overview, but I wanted to make sure that you have a little bit of a picture of how the divisions are funded before we go on to the 24-25 budget. Did we lose the slides? I didn't know if it was just me. I'm going to keep going, and I'm going to let someone else figure out the technology because I know you're pressed for time today, Mr. Chair. So our budget, there we go. Okay, so our budget priorities, our budget as a whole, as I said, that $287 million is addressing four key strategic areas, and those are connecting people to the outdoors, mitigating and adapting to climate change, managing natural resources proactively, and addressing operational needs. Each of these categories then contains a suite of proposals that were developed and vetted and selected to ensure the best opportunity to support outdoor recreation, conservation, and science-based natural resource management now and into the future. So we'll go through the proposals by this category, and you'll see that suite of proposals for each of them. This is just the overview of the governor's recommendation and how that breaks out into those four categories. You'll see the connect people to the outdoors is the largest category, followed by operational needs, and then mitigate and adapt to climate and managing natural resources proactively. So connecting people to the outdoors is one of our key strategic priorities at the Department of Natural Resources. We know that connecting people to the outdoors in meaningful ways contributes to human health, prosperity, quality of life, and builds stewardship for our special places and our shared natural resources. We have in this budget a tremendous opportunity to invest in connections to the outdoors, outdoor experiences, and protection and stewardship of the resources that drive those experiences. I'm going to come back to the Get Out More proposal in a moment, but this suite contains our Get Out More proposal, modernizing outdoor recreation experiences, improving visitor services at state park and recreation areas, addressing state trail maintenance, funding shortfall, improving Minnesota's water recreation experiences, providing funding for the walk-in access program, and funding for the No Child Left Inside program, which is a grant program that specifically prioritizes communities and entities where there are limited opportunities for kids to participate in outdoors and nature-based education. The Get Out More proposal really is the heart of this category. It is a transformative budget proposal that will ensure Minnesotans of all abilities and interests can fully enjoy a high-quality outdoor recreation system in whatever way they choose. This slide presents an overview of the investments included in our Get Out More proposal. The first column there shows the general fund budget included in these governor's budget. In this governor's budget recommendation in those categories of enhancing access, modernizing camping and related infrastructure, modernizing boating access, enhancing fisheries and fishing infrastructure, and restoring streams and modernizing water-related infrastructure. The green column shows the capital investments that were presented to Chairman Lee's Capital Investment Committee that contribute to the realization of the Get Out More initiative and were part of the governor's capital budget recommendations. It's together that these operating and capital budget recommendations constitute a meaningful and visible investment that will be seen and felt by Minnesotans across the state. And so, as I said, there's $76 million to enhance accessibility at DNR-managed facilities and public lands for people with disabilities, $35 million to modernize camping and related infrastructure, $50 million to modernize boat access, $60 million to enhance fisheries and shoreline fishing infrastructure, and then $15 million to restore streams and modernize water-related infrastructure. Within this category, there are also there are these significant one-time investments, and then there are proposed ongoing investments that come. Those investments come from proposed fee increases. The fees, the three that are included here in this proposal, the parks vehicle permit fee, the fishing license fee, and the boating watercraft fees have not been changed in many years. In the case of the watercraft registration fees, they haven't been changed since 2006. So adjustments are needed to address inflation and provide the resources that are necessary to deliver the resource protection experiences and services that those fees were envisioned to support. This includes a $3.3 million investment in annually in the state park system that is supported by that increase in a park permit fee. The fee increase proposed is $3 on the daily pass, so it would go from $7 to $10, and $10 increase on the annual pass, so it would go from $35 to $45. And those increases ensure our parks are maintained into the future. Also included is a $1.2 million investment in fisheries management through an angling license increase. This is to pair with the one-time investments that help modernize our hatcheries, provide the places to fish like the boat access or the shore fishing access or fishing piers. This is ongoing funding that provides DNR fisheries expertise to collect data and information to help them, our fishery staff, make population management decisions and lake management decisions. For a resident angling license for folks 18 or older, it would go from $25 to $30. So it's a $5 increase, which if any of you have bought a fishing lure lately, this is less than the cost of an average fishing lure. And then finally, $6.5 million to invest in our public water access sites and provide modern recreation, water-based recreation experiences to Minnesotans through an increase on our watercraft registration fees. We can provide details on that. Our fees are scaled based on the size of the watercraft. And so just for one example, it would be a $32 increase for a boat that is between 17 and 19 feet, and that fee is paid over 3 years. So it would be $32 for the three-year registration. Our next budget priority is mitigate and adapt to climate change. And this really is about maximizing the investment that we have in the state lands that we already manage to capture and store carbon and offset greenhouse gas emissions. So the proposals here are for enhancing and restoring that capacity in our grasslands, our wetlands, our forests, and our peatlands. And then combined, we also have investments proposed for private forest landowner technical assistance so that we're managing not only the public forests, but private forests as well for climate benefits. Our third budget priority is to proactively manage our state's natural resources. And this is really about aiming to address issues before they become problems, responding to current and emerging issues and being proactive and innovative in addressing them, such as we see increasing demands on our public waters for a variety of uses, and we play a key role in providing planning and technical assistance that can avoid those multiple and increasing demands from becoming conflicts. We proactively manage CWD through surveillance and monitoring and response efforts. And we aim to prevent and slow the spread of aquatic invasive species. And so you'll see in this category the investments of $1.4 million in chronic wasting disease management, investments in fishing of $2.4 million, and the water work that I mentioned, the $1.7 million in protecting and managing our water resources, in addition to modernizing our broadband utility licensing system for state lands, updating utility license fees for state lands and public waters. I'll come back to that in a minute. Enforcement, aviation modernization, and increasing our capacity to do quality mining regulatory work. In this category, there are also three fee increases associated with the investments. The $800,000 annually that we propose to invest in utility license will be generated through a restructuring of our utility license application fees. So utility license permits are needed where utilities cross or are proposed to cross state lands or state waters. And then the DNR has to evaluate those proposed crossings for impacts on the waters and lands. Under current state law, most utility license applications are actually exempt from paying that application fee. And so our proposal would require all utility license permit seekers to pay an application fee. That application fee would include a base of two crossings. And then and if there were more than two crossings, there would be an additional $500 fee for each crossing, since we have to evaluate each one of those crossings in a proposal. So through this restructure, application fees would further contribute to the cost of DNR's operating that permitting and issuing permits in an efficient, effective manner. We're proposing $450,000 annually invested in water management programs through increases in water use and public water fees. So this would include increasing the summer water use surcharge to promote water conservation. These are typically non-essential water users like golf courses and landscaping. And then the public water fees would be on our work in public water permits in order to help us manage that process, protecting an important public resources and balancing the need between fees and general fund revenue for that. And then finally, we propose an increase in the aquatic invasive species surcharge from the current $10.60 to $20. I think it was a number of years ago we had proposed a fee increase to $15. The legislature ultimately settled on $10.60, and we would like to catch that up to the $20 that is needed to restore DNR's capacity to address aquatic invasive species, but also provide grant dollars to our partners in local units of government, tribal governments, and lake associations. And then the final category is addressing our operational needs. We have one deficiency request that relates to some safety needs at our Drill Corps Library in Hibbing. That's a $1 million investment that is needed to address racking systems that hold those core samples. They're currently failing, and the library is currently closed. We'd like to get that racking fixed and get the library back open. We have a operating adjustment that supports the maintenance of our current delivery of services. This $89.9 million covers our compensation growth, our IT cost growth, our fleet and gasoline cost increases, rising facility maintenance costs, utility cost growth, and increasing to the cost of contracts for core services such as trash and recycling removal and septic pumping. And so I'll just be clear, these are costs we incur to deliver services. If we don't get the operating increase to cover the inflation that we've realized on these, we will have to cut back core services. And then one of the important proposals is to adapt and modernize DNR services to ensure cybersecurity needs are met for state and customer safety and efficient business operations. These IT investments really lay the foundation for enhancing customer experiences by creating a modern experience for engaging with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources online. I think that's one of the larger things we hear, particularly about our hunting and fishing license system, is it's a little bit antiquated compared to what most people are used to using in this modern day where you can do most things on a smartphone. And then the final item here is for enforcement, public safety, and preparedness. This request is to provide the funding and equipment that is necessary so that our conservation officers can respond to general public safety events that are outside their normal conservation officer duty trainings, the kinds of things they have been asked to do in the last number of years. And Mr. Chair, again, I apologize for the quick overview of what is a large agency budget and a large and important agency request, but we aim to save some time for questions and discussion with the committee here. And then I'll just say we look forward to working with the committee as this budget moves through the process. We think we have a tremendous opportunity to modernize our outdoor recreation experiences, to connect people to the outdoors, to continue to have Minnesota be a leader in mitigating and adapting to climate change and addressing emerging issues in a proactive way. And we look forward to working with the committee to accomplish those things.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have about till 4 o'clock for questions. I do have one just to start. The Drill Corps Library you have as FY23, and we have that as a separate bill. And I'm wondering if there is an ability, because it's a current fiscal year appropriation, if we could run that separate, if we could maybe move with that earlier. I don't know if Representative Heintzman would be amenable to that, but it's maybe just tell us a little bit more about the Drill Corps Library and the situation it's in.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I can let Assistant Commissioner Meyer speak to sort of the bill process, but what I will say about the Drill Corps Library and is there sort of two issues. We also have some space needs. We are out of space, and so we have a bonding request in for those additional space that's needed in new buildings. This really is a deficiency request. It is a time-sensitive request because the library is currently closed. Our employees can't go in it. The public can't go in it due to safety concerns. The issue is these cores of rock, they're extremely heavy, and so the racking systems that house them need to be quite hefty to support them, and the current racking is now of an age where it's no longer able to do that. And so statutorily, we are actually mandated to have that library open to the public, and we are not able to do so at this time. So that is the reason that we are asking for that $1 million as a deficiency request for the racking, which is a non-bondable expense and really separate issue from the expansion space we need. It's just literally to get the core that we have today back available to the public.
I think it has been dropped in as a separate bill in both the House and the Senate.
Mr. Chair, that would be our intent, and hopefully it could move separately to allow us to get the materials ordered, to get it installed, and get the Drill Corps Library back open. If you've never been there before, I encourage you to go visit. It is a geologist's dream, I'll call it, but it is really, it shows our unique history as a state, as a world, as a country, right? And it's there for everyone to take out and look from every core that's been drilled. So we look forward to the support and trying to get that back going as soon as possible.
It would be House File 2324, if members want to sign up to that. Members, questions? Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. With all of the lakes in Minnesota, I know that we're having lots of water quality issues around that. And I know that there's like an assessment tool that you have developed, or there is one. Can you tell me more about what that assessment tool is? I'm just trying to look at here. What did I find? The Watershed Health Assessment Framework. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edelson, I believe you might be talking about the tool that the MPCA uses to assess water quality. So the Pollution Control Agency is really the agency that has the delegated authority for water quality and the standards there from the Environmental Protection Agency. We work very closely with them. For example, some sampling on, you know, fish tissue to help them in that assessment, and then, but mostly we'll be dealing with the water quantity issues.
Representative Edelson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, that's helpful. So I guess with Representative Jordan's bill that we'll be having up here soon, you would interact with the fact that there's been several, I don't know if it was like in the last 10 years, three large interactions where we've lost fish. And so if mass fish are dying, there's obviously, and that's quantity, I understand a lot of times can happen from floods and other things, but I guess while you might see the separation, the public in the state of Minnesota, I don't know that we delineate. And so if fish are dying, then you wonder what's happening with our water. And so if you could just talk about that a little bit more and how you're overlapping with MPCA and what that looks like, because I can tell you the residents of my community, I don't care if it's DNR or MPCA, we want to know what's happening with our water.
Commissioner Stroman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Edelson. And I agree with you 100%. And the goal was not to pass the buck. It was more, I'm not going to be able to explain to you the details of a tool that is not under the jurisdiction of our agency. But I think, you know, you've pointed out the importance of the need for the agencies really to knit together where our jurisdictions either overlap or come up against each other, because Minnesotans don't care. We often say the same thing when it comes to land management. People don't care if they're recreating in a county park or a state park, right? They have certain desires around that experience. And so with respect to the fish kill issue or water quality issues in particular, yes, that would be a place where, you know, we come in because of concern for the loss of fish or wildlife, concern for that, you know, public water, the ecological integrity of it, through a process of understanding if it is if the cause is stemming from something on the land that is coming off into the water and is a water quality issue. We would work hand in hand with the department, with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, to understand, you know, where it's coming from, what it is. And I think part of where I hope the conversation goes on the Representative Jordan's bill and the fish kills, how do we prevent it? Right? I mean, generally we know what's causing these occurrences to happen, and how do we get in front of them working DNR, Pollution Control Agency, Department of Ag, you know, and our local partners to make sure that we aren't having things from, you know, chemicals or other substances from the land run off and hurt not only the water quality, but then by extension, the things that live in that water.
I have Representative Jacob, then Representative Lee, then Representative Scraba, then Representative Fisher, then Representative Lizgard. And Representative Heinzman somewhere near the end, if there's more. So Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. So you just stated generally we know about what's causing these fish kills. Would you elaborate on that?
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Jacob, certainly, I should clarify, I'm not talking about every single one, and there can be multiple things. At DNR, we watch very carefully. For example, we'll see fish kills now happen after the winter due to winter conditions and ice, right? That is sort of a natural occurrence. What we do know with the last number of fish kills that we have collaboratively worked on between the agencies, we may not know the specifics, but generally they're due to some application that was put on the land, then that that substance is running off into the lakes and rivers and causing a change in the water chemistry that's affecting the fish and causing a die-off. And so while we may not know the specific of what it is or exactly where it came from, we know generally, for example, that it's typically a bad idea to apply ag chemicals or manure onto fields, particularly before large rain events. And because we're seeing more of these extreme rain events where the rain comes down very quickly in a short amount of time, that can cause that runoff situation to happen and then can cause a fish kill.
And we have provided time during Representative Jordan's bill to discuss that particular bill, but Representative Jacob.
Yeah, so the majority of these fish kills have happened in my district, and you know, they've certainly been looking for many years to find exactly what, determine exactly what the cause is. And with as many kills as there's been, it, you know, they should have found something at this point. And this, some of the things that they don't talk about: high turbidity after heavy rains, low oxygen after heavy rains, intentional or unintentional release of toxins into a stream, including illegal dumpings, ash runoff from the prescribed burns in the area after it rains. So certainly potentially agricultural activity, all potential causes. My concern is that I want to make sure that we're not just disregarding any other potential cause of the problem. You know, there's been an outcry, and you've got Jeff Roberg in the testimony here, and he has just been screaming from the top of his lungs in my district to incriminate the farmer. And rightfully so, if the farmer's responsible, we need to deal with that. But, you know, my hope would be that we're looking at everything, and if there's other causes, that we're willing to look at that as well. Would that be the intention of this?
Mr. Chairman?
Well, we are going to discuss the fish bill at 4 o'clock. I've got six people on the list about the budget. So if we can just hold the fish kill discussion until 4 o'clock, you've got the question in front of you, but I want to make sure that we get people on both sides to ask questions about the budget. And we'll come back to you, Representative.
Okay.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. So in your presentation, something that struck me was the enforcement public safety preparedness piece. Can you talk to us? I'm looking at the description of the budget item request. The training will include topics related to First Amendment rights, rights of the media, field tactics, legal authority, and other civil processes. Are you going to have training around de-escalation, or what are other trainings that will be part of that process?
Mr. Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lee, I can also have Colonel Smith come from our Department of Enforcement, and he can probably answer in greater detail. What I will say at a high level is the response and the de-escalation techniques and some of the things, the First Amendment issues, are very unique to the types of response that our conservation officers have been doing to support State Patrol and other local law enforcement the last couple of years. That is a different kind of training than they would typically do for conservation officer duties. And so the idea here is, if the state of Minnesota wants to continue to rely on conservation officers to supplement other state and local law enforcement, then it's absolutely essential that they be trained, both for their own safety and the safety of the public that they're encountering, and that they have the right equipment for that. So again, if you have more specifics about that training, I would ask Colonel Smith to explain, because he'll be able to do that. But that's the general idea. And so, you know, we're really saying to the legislature, if you want our officers to continue to be in a position to do that, we need to make sure they're trained.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I could touch base with Colonel Smith after this. I think more specific to this request, then, since you're asking this to be an ongoing funding, are all conservation officers going to be trained together in 1 year, or is it going to spread out among 4 different years? And then also for the equipments, what type of equipments are you asking for? Is it just the same equipments every 4 year, or if you can explain that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lee, we're going to have Colonel Smith come and answer that question.
Welcome and state your name for the record.
For the record, Colonel Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, Representative. So the commission did a good job of explaining. So it is something that we normally haven't trained on. And because of our funding that we've had and how we're funded, we concentrate more on game and fish or recreational type training. And so when we start to do this, this type of work, we want to ensure, so we put all our folks through some First Amendment training. We put folks through how to deal with media when it comes to large scale civil unrest and whatnot. And so if we're going to continue to do this work, this needs to be ongoing training so that our officers, it's fresh in their memories. It's you know, repetitive type training. Some of the equipment we're talking about is like transportation. And so we had a really hard time when there were some events of getting our officers around. When you need to move 100 COs at one time, we're not going to take 50 pickups, you know, and go. And so we ended up having to get some buses. And so just maintaining those buses, maintaining some of the personal protective equipment. There is some expense with the training that goes on as well. And so it's just ongoing training. There's a national standard through the Center of Domestic Preparedness that people need to go through some refresher training every couple of years. And so we'll be putting that into our cycle of training. And so this is going to be training above and beyond that minimal training that is required by the Post Board. And so, yes, we'll be cycling people through.
President Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And last follow-up, then, Commissioner or Colonel, then, says here that unfunded expenditure relating to public safety in connection to protests and civil unrest. And so if we were to pass this in the operating budget, then can we expect that if there are going to be future protests or civil unrest, that you're not going to ask for the state to provide additional funding for expenditures and that this will be enough? Or are we going to, if there are unfortunate events in the future, that you know your law enforcement officers have to work with the other agencies, that you're going to ask for more funding from the state?
Colonel Smith. Mr. Chair, Representative. So this is just for the training and being prepared. If an event happens, it could be a one-day event. It could be like we saw after the murder of George Floyd. It was 2 weeks where we were deployed, and that ran up a lot of money, and so we had to come back to the legislature. And so this funding is only for the training and being prepared. If an event pops up, then we would probably, depending on the size and how long it is, we'd have to come back. And we've come back because those should be general fund dollars. Those should not be, that work should not be paid for through user fees, through the game and fish or rec, any of the natural resource funds or anything like that. And so we have come back and we have gotten that reimbursement from the general fund.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, very quick. You raised some of the fees. Are the fees proportional to resident, non-resident, or are they across the board? Thank you.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scraba, there are fee increases proposed at various licenses. So, yes, there's an increase for resident fishing. There is an increase for non-resident fishing. The amounts vary, and we can get you that specifics. I didn't have time to go through all of them because of all of the different types of licenses that we offer. And then boats would be similar, depending on the size of your watercraft. It's a, you know, different fee, and so there's a differing amount of the increase depending on which category.
Mr. Chair, is there a way you could get us a breakdown of that, and then we're good?
Mr. Chair and Representative Scraba, we can certainly do that. We have that. Again, I just didn't have, I would have been here for an hour going through each line. No.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lizegard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the commissioner and assistant commissioner, I first want to say thank you. If you could move. Yeah, thank you. I want to say thank you because I know how hard your staff works in multiple areas, including dealing with Lake St. James and Canisteo and all of, you know, all the variables that go with that. And I know that they have communicated with the communities, and I truly appreciate that. I do know that everything seems to go to court and be challenged in the state of Minnesota. And so my question is do you have enough resources to be able to manage that? Because just taking a wild guess, I don't see that changing anytime in the near future. And my fear is that projects and opportunities across the state of Minnesota are held up due to the lawsuits. And I just want to make sure that you have the proper staff and the resources to go through that process.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liz Lagarde, we do not have a request for legal funds in this budget. That is because we still have some funds from the last biennial appropriation. We are asking for an extension on those funds so they don't cancel back and we can continue to use that. We do believe those will be enough. And the other thing I will say, part of what you see right in our embedded in our operating budget and in particular the issues, the areas around permitting, the utility licensing and the mining regulatory capacity, those are the places where we want to have the capacity to do work with integrity and credibility and, you know, that good science-based work that we, our staff do, but make sure we can continue to do that work when the level of activity is increasing. So it's not on the legal side, but it's, I think, you know, again, to maintain that trust with the public that we are doing our due diligence on those things, we need the capacity, and that's where those items are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will say that you know, the process and the lawsuits that have happened, you guys or the state of Minnesota and that project has won them all because you do your job. The last thing I will make a comment that I'm pretty proud of this. We talk about water, and Representative Edelson asked about that book. I've actually seen that book, and in Greater Minnesota, I think that our quality of water is extremely good. In Northeast Minnesota, and I think that I would like to, you or whoever has that book, if we could share that with the committee. I think it's important for them to see the quality of water and where the challenges are. Thank you.
Mr. Sherman.
Mr. Chair, I'll just say thank you for the comments, Representative Lissigard.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple of questions and then a comment. Number one, are there any new fees proposed in this budget, or is it just increases? And then in addition to that, in terms of budget, were there any projects funded in last night's bonding bill that might have covered some of the requests that are in this budget?
Mr. Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, regarding the fee increases, all of the fees proposed are increases to existing fees. The one exception would be on the utility license, the licenses cross state lands and state waters. We are proposing to restore the more expanded nature of those fees that was there previous to, I forget when that was changed, 2012. When some of those fees were removed. So that would be the one exception where you might consider it a new fee. The bonding bill that passed last night does not cover any of the work that is included in this general fund budget. We, as I said, we strategically, particularly with the proposal around modernizing outdoor recreation experiences, separated those things that are eligible for capital or bonding funds and those things that are not. And those, so nothing that was included in the bill last night is covering anything that's in this budget. These are general fund items.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. So a couple of comments, Commissioner. I hope that you would deliver a message for me, for my caucus, to the governor. You're discussing the governor's proposals in today's overview. And I got to tell you that the folks around the state that I'm talking to are especially frustrated seeing fee increases coming in the governor's budget considering a $19 billion surplus. And so going back home, I don't hear people looking at each other or
communicating back to my office saying, oh, it's just a single fishing lure or a box of ammunition, you know, trying to comparatively justify the fee increases when there's a $19 billion surplus. And you've got a big job to do. I mean, there's some stuff in here that I really, really appreciate, especially modernizing boat accesses and improving our fisheries facilities. Sportsmen know these things need to get done. But when there is such a significant surplus and we start talking about raising fees, folks are pissed. And I don't know how to get to the governor to communicate this, so I'm putting it on your shoulders. I'm frustrated, you know, for them and working to try to communicate that as best I can today. Otherwise, I sure appreciate you coming in, answering questions, and sharing a little bit of what your vision is going forward. But these fee increases are a concern. The needs, we get it. But with a surplus, it's tough to balance that as we're going back home to our districts.
Maybe it'd just be better to say folks are angry. Maybe. Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heinzman, I appreciate those comments, and I have no doubt that we will have a robust discussion throughout the remainder of this session about how to meet the needs and provide those outdoor recreation experiences that Minnesotans are looking for. I will just say briefly, the reason we have both, and you will see we do have significant one-time investments from the surplus proposed in this budget as well, but we need to maintain those investments over time. We don't just have one-time needs. We have ongoing needs. And so, again, we've strategically paired the capital investments with the one-time general fund needs and then thought strategically about what do we need ongoing to provide those services and maintain those investments. And part of that is fee increases. So I appreciate your comment about the timing and the optics, but the reality is we asked for many of these increases a number of years ago and we didn't get them, and so we are back here again asking for them now.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just cap it with a recent MMB overview of our budget. One of the findings that really leapt off the page was a significant decrease in disposable incomes. While there may be a surplus, the folks at home aren't seeing that in their pocketbooks. And if I remember correctly, the number was almost 11%, a decrease in disposable income. So I'll leave it at that.
And Commissioner, I have a couple of comments before we wrap up. One is, we haven't touched on, but I think the issue of water appropriations and water export is a big issue. I know I certainly hear that from my constituents, you know, whether it's a train or a pipe or millions of plastic bottles of Minnesota water moving. And we keep hearing some of our neighboring, well, not even neighboring states, our southwestern states looking longingly at our water. So maybe just a comment on your approach on this, because I think we may need to do more. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, I mean, as you know, that's an issue that we're following very closely, whether it's related to a specific proposal, and we've dealt with some of those, or whether it's just related to we're seeing that increasing trend, as I talked about, in demand for water, whether it's within the state or folks without the state. And so I think making sure, again, that we have the capacity to understand what is our abundance of water, what is available, and to make sure that we have the capacity to evaluate those kinds of things when they come forward, so that you know, we have an eye on sustainability. And finally, you know, we did make some changes to statute a couple of years ago related to the water train proposal to close some loopholes specifically related to export. So if there are more specific ideas, we'd be happy to discuss them with you or any members of the committee.
And then following up on Representative Lee's question, you know, the response was, if we choose to have conservation officers involved, and maybe we should choose that they don't. Maybe that's a choice that we should make. maybe, you know, I think you see conservation officers getting into the job to be doing the work outdoors and protecting the environment, and may not have been prepared, and I don't mean with equipment or training, but may not have been prepared for what they were being asked to do. And I think that's a question we should think about, and all the consequences involved with that. But if it's not us, who makes that decision? And then finally, on just the, as we're going to slip into the fish kill discussion here, you know, when we were dealing with this with pollinators, there was the need to respond quickly so that the science could be employed, because the longer the critter is dead, the harder it is to find out what killed it. And whether it's fish or whether it's bees or whether it's deer, that quick response is there. And how do we respond quickly when there is an incident? You know, what would happen if we had a train derailment like what happened in Ohio? And how would we respond quickly and involve? So I think that's kind of where Representative Jordan is going. But maybe just to look at it from that perspective, any comments you might have?
Mr. Chair, you know, I think you will have no disagreement for me that a prompt response is, you know, going to get us better information and, you know, the ability to have the most tools to actually resolve the issue. I mean, that's clearly been our approach to chronic wasting disease, and that's why we are putting this emphasis on a proactive approach rather than always reacting to things. You know, this issue in particular, there are a number of agencies involved, and I think, you know, to the point that Representative Edelson made earlier, the public doesn't distinguish. They want the state of Minnesota to respond, and so that is that place where it is the responsibility of the multiple agencies to be coordinated and be seamless so that we are bringing the multitudes of our expertise and experience to resolve those issues. So, you know, that's something too with these kinds of things, that the interagency collaboration is very important.
Thank you. Hopefully you'll be back again.
Thank you.
We are going to move to House File 81, Representative Jordan, reporting of fish kills and development of protocol for state response required. And we have a hard stop at 4:30. We have four testifiers on the list. If they could limit their time to 2 minutes each. Representative Jordan, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 81 be re-referred to the Public Safety Policy and Finance Committee, and I have a DE amendment I'd like to consider as well.
Representative Jordan, would you like to move the DE1 amendment?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan moves the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan.
This language was written in conjunction with the Minnesota DNR and Minnesota PCA to better implement the intent of the bill and report fish kills and implement the protocols adequately to respond to a fish kill. The DE also considerably narrows the bill and removes requirements related to the University of Minnesota, the EQB, and the courts. This will impact the fiscal note. It's still well worth a read, but the numbers will be different. These changes will also speed up reporting, response, and I ask for member support.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Ayes have it. The DE1 amendment is adopted. And the reason it's going to public safety is there's a $7,000 fiscal note for informing the duty officer. So we talked with the chair. Representative Jordan, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Sounds like we're all excited to talk about fish kills today. And we can do that with House File 81 to better address how our state responds to fish kills and alerts the public. Fish kills are a mass die-off of fish in a body of water. They are uncommon, but they are an indication of something wrong. There are two types of fish kills, and we have different agency responses based on the fish kill itself. The first type was discussed by Commissioner Stroman, and it's one that stems from like maybe a water-related event. For example, shallow bodies of water can freeze solid in the winter and can kill all the fish in that given body. Conversely, extreme heat can also result in a fish kill, which we saw very dramatically in the Pacific Northwest in the summer of 2021. In Minnesota, the DNR's fisheries team is the lead agency to respond to these sorts of fish kills. The second type of fish kill is the result of a toxin in the water that kills the fish in a body of water. In this circumstance, the MPCA is the lead agency to report and respond to fish kills. While we have an interagency response protocol, we need to make sure the public is aware of fish kills when they happen, especially when there is a potential public health impact. Section 1 of this bill defines a fish kill and creates a reporting requirement when one occurs. Section 2 outlines how our state agencies respond and report on these fish kills to the public. This requires reporting on the cause of the fish kill and how the state will notify Minnesotans of potential hazards to their health. This is a right to know bill. When something is going to fish, we should all take note. Fish kills are in the news. As we all heard most recently from Chair Hansen, the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, and the environmental disaster there, and we've heard about this train derailment and the environmental disaster that's occurring. All the fish in the nearby river near the train derailment were killed. And those fish carcasses are now being evaluated for the exact contaminants they contain and the impact that those contaminants are having on human health. Closer to home, the Rush Creek fish kill from last summer has been making headlines since approximately 2,500 brown trout were killed. Rush Creek is one of the very best trout streams we have in this state. I've fished it myself. Last time I tried, though, it rained and my dad and I got skunked. And it is also stocked by the DNR every other year with brown and rainbow trout. That fish kill was just recently reported. It was caused by runoff of manure and pesticides on a property upstream. And I am sure you will hear more about the Rush Creek fish kill from our testimony. But this is a bill that is a statewide bill. This is not a specific region of the state. This deals with fish kills that happen, that can and do happen across the state. For example, a waterway near my home is a stream in Fridley that goes right by and feeds right into the Mississippi River upstream from my drinking water that runs by a number of Superfund sites. If there is an issue in Rice Creek, which I know goes through Representative Fisher's district, I want to know about that too, and I want to know about any impacts that might have on my health. This bill language is still being worked on with advocates and our state agencies and will be amended in the Public Safety Committee to better address who can report a fish kill and ensure that these reports happen with the speed that we need. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think we should move to testimony. I also have individuals on hand from the DNR and MPCA to answer member questions.
Thank you. Carly Griffith, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And if Lee Stowe, John Lincheski, and Jeff Broberg could be on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Hansen and members of the committee, my name is Carly Griffith. I am the Water Program Director at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. MCEA supports this bill because it acknowledges that the current fish kill response guidance is inadequate to the scope, scale, and severity of the problem, in particular to the fish kills that result from toxic contamination, the anthropogenic causes that Representative Jordan outlined in her introduction. And it needs to be updated through a comprehensive interagency protocol. We need a comprehensive protocol for a few key reasons. First, the current fish kill guidance has not been able to effectively address the sources of contamination. In fact, fish kill events have increased in both intensity and frequency, with 4 major fish kill events in the Winona County area since 2015. Second, the current guidance minimizes the public health risk of fish kills. Fish kill events are a dramatic symptom of widespread contamination of surface and groundwater resources, largely from agricultural land management practices, as were identified in the Rush Creek fish kill investigation. Especially in areas like the karst region of southeastern Minnesota, a fish kill event is a strong indicator that groundwater resources may be contaminated as well. Therefore, public health must be a part of Minnesota's fish kill response. The bill has specific provisions to more effectively address the sources of contamination. It requires a rapid response team to travel to the site to collect samples within 24 to 48 hours of the incident. I will note that this is similar. There's a precedent for this. It's similar to the state toxic spills response. It also broadens data collection procedures to include samples from tributary streams, private wells with landowner consent. This also gets to the public health component, and also nearby soil and groundwater. The bill also addresses the inadequacy of the current fish kill response from a public health perspective. With input from the Department of Health, which is brought into this interagency protocol as they haven't been before, the protocol must include a communications plan with a health risk assessment to notify potentially impacted downstream users of the surface water of the potential hazards, as well as those in the vicinity whose public or private water supply may be impacted. To conclude, I would like to make two recommendations to the committee to strengthen the bill language. As written, the bill directs the interagency team to identify rules or regulatory processes that should be revised as part of the fish kill investigation report. But we need to get ahead of the problem before the next fish kill occurs, not after. Towards that end, MCEA recommends that the bill be amended to direct the interagency team to submit a report to the legislature at the start of next session that identifies relevant laws and rules, such as setback requirements in the feedlot rules, that need to be amended to better address the sources of contamination and prevent future fish kill events. Second, as written, the bill doesn't provide for public notice and comment period. To ensure that the protocol adequately responds to community concerns, MCEA recommends that the bill be amended to allow for a public notice and comment period. And we think the Environmental Quality Board would be an appropriate body to do that public notice. And then finally, MCEA recommends that the fish kill notices and investigation reports be posted to the EQB monitor because, as has already been discussed, public communications is a key part of what needs to be improved in fish kill response. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Lee Stowe, Land Stewardship Project. I'm going to have to cut you down to about a minute. Welcome. State your name for record.
So, my name is Leland Stowe. Thank you, Chairman and members, for this opportunity. I'm a 62-year-old father and grandfather. I'm an avid fly fisherman from Apple Valley, longtime member of Todd Unlimited, and a new member of Land Stewardship Project Steering Committee in Lewiston. Last summer, I took my 6-year-old grandson out for a search fly fishing outing on Rush Creek, the one that just got killed. His dad came along, too. The night before, he practiced the hello, it's for you, beginning fly casting technique in our backyard. On the following day, Easton caught a fish on about his fifth cast by white wading Rush Creek. And that's what this picture is. He probably netted it himself. That's the fish. And his smile said everything to me. He loved seeing the trout in the crystal clear water and couldn't believe the number of fish present. He loved seeing the insects and waiting in the intimacy of the moving water. We took a lot for granted that day as we thought that we'd come back to the same idyllic scene another day. Not so. I got the sad news from my neighbor 3 weeks later. 1 mile of Rush Creek had been killed off. I was moved to action, so I wanted to prevent future additional kills. I dug for information. I was found shocked to find that, not just that, Winona County residents numbering in about 1,000 cannot drink their well water because of nitrate contamination. I want to return to the creek with Easton. I want his children and their children to have that same opportunity to experience an idyllic day and see a kid smile after netting his first fish on a fly. And we can't forget the 1,000 people in Winona County whose well water is undrinkable. I ask that you support the fish bill. It will help us more fully understand the reasons for the fish kill in fragile places like Rush Creek. It lends transparency to the investigative process, lays out responsibilities. Importantly, by supporting this bill, you're also safeguarding people's health so that through common sense notification of those downstream, so they might choose to have their water tested before drinking it. Thank you for supporting this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. John Lincheski, Minnesota Trout Unlimited, and then Jeff Broberg.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is John Lincheski. I'm with Minnesota Trout Unlimited, lifelong trout angler, and I've seen a lot of these fish kills on our streams. Very familiar with Rush Creek, Garvin Brook, Whitewater. All of these were the subject of fish kills in the last 7 years. I'm going to kind of throw up my notes a little bit. I think the chair said I had 20 minutes to talk about fish kills. but seriously, it was so refreshing to hear the commissioner of the DNR tell it like it is. We need to do something about preventing fish kills. This is an excellent bill. We support it. It will help provide information to make further improvements, but it was so refreshing to hear her say, we generally know what's causing these, and we do, and the agency staff on the ground do, and that's why we like MCA, believe a provision should be added saying, instructing the agencies, you know what's causing this in general, maybe not exactly which parcel, but let's identify some areas of the rules, current rules or statutes or a regulatory scheme that need some changes. So we strongly support the addition of that to the bill. I submitted some written testimony, so I won't repeat that. I wanted to thank Representative Jordan for authoring this bill. Look forward to working with her as it moves through the process. I want to particularly point out Section 2, Subdivision 1, Item Number 10, which calls for considering the use of contractors and a rapid response team. There's precedent for this, I think, with toxic chemical spills. This is a wonderful addition to this bill that will greatly enhance the speed with which the state responds to this. That won't cost the state a lot of money, I don't believe. It's a very short window when what I call sadly, we now have sort of the fish kill season in Minnesota. That happens every year between July and September. It's a pretty short window. You don't pay a contractor if they're not responding to a kill. So I applaud that. I could talk all day about this. This is a big, big issue. I just want to remind people that trout water is drinking water. I mean, all our trout streams are actually protected under state law as drinking water supplies, our groundwater, that's drinking water. So, the trout are just the canary in the coal mine here. Obviously, trout fishermen, lifelong, this is near and dear to my heart, but really we should all be concerned about drinking water. What's happening is our drinking water is being polluted again and again, and so time for change. This is a great start, this bill, and we really encourage the members of the committee and the author to consider some amendments going forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Jeff Broberg, and then maybe if the DNR could just come forward and state their position on the bill, and we'll go to Representative Jacobs' question.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Jeff Broberg. I'm a licensed professional geologist. I had a career as a risk manager. I spent over 20 years in charge of trout associations, Minnesota Trout Association, National Trout Center. And I live in Elba Township on Dakota land, within 12 miles of all of the fish kills that have occurred in the last 6 years. I've witnessed three of them. 2016, on the south branch of Whitewater, 3 miles from my house, I was one of the people that got a call early. And I went down to the stream, and I found something shocking. The water level had gone down, dead fish everywhere. But in a line 3 feet above the water table were dead crawfish. They crawled out of the water before they died. That means it was a toxin. They don't die from a temperature event, a low oxygen event, muddy water. They were killed by a toxin. And we have a pretty clear picture of what's going on with these, and I'm disappointed to be here today to have to ask the legislature to have the agencies do their job and to help people prevent fish kills. There isn't a single farmer that wants to be involved with one of these. I get calls from people all the time. How can I make sure I'm not responsible? The start of that is a good investigation. What we have now is weak efforts that come up with inconclusive results, and we weaponize that in conclusion. It gives us pause in that we get narratives like it's the heavy rainfall that killed the fish. It's not. In trout streams, these are man-made events. I want to go back to the fact that these are symptoms of bad water. And we're not addressing the health risks. In Garvin Brook, 2019, it's a losing stream in a karst environment where the geologist put dye in the stream, it disappeared. 2 days later, it came out in wells downstream. When the fish kill occurred, there was no sense about notifying those well owners that they were drinking the water that killed the fish. We have silos of responsibility in the state, and we don't want our health advice from the Ag Department. We don't want the PCA to give us fishing advice. We want health advice from the health department. This bill brings those things together, puts together a format, requires better communication. It will be better for the state. And we would agree that other notification would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you
for your time today.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? If we could, Commissioner Meyer, do you want to just state the DNR's position? And Representative Jacob is following up on. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner DNR. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this bill. I have been in contact with Representative Jordan. We've been speaking about it, and also the Pollution Control Agency and Department of Agriculture are also here today to speak to it if you need to. Fish kills are very important and very serious to us. When these events occur, we do our best to get there as soon as possible, make sure that staff have equipment. We will be working on that throughout the bill to make sure we have that rapid response there. But first and foremost, it's an interagency response. The DNR is responsible until an identification or a source is identified for what had caused the fish kill. Many times these are environmental. It could be a disease. It could be a virus. It could be, as Commissioner Stroman said, just the lack of oxygen over the wintertime in a lake. The bill identifies 25 fish or more. Within the protocol, we would identify, it's intended to identify what the response would be under those certain numbers and conditions. It's really important to think that it is our interagency fish kill response team made up of the DNR, Pollution Control Agency, Department of Agriculture, and the Department of Health. There is a protocol already established. We've developed that in 2016, 2017. We are actually in the process of improving that or updating that, and we're participating in a continuous improvement project with the Pollution Control Agency to make sure that our response is immediate, adequate, and there is follow-through. I think the one place where the conversation is lacking, as you heard from the testifiers, is what happens, what are we doing to make sure this doesn't happen again? Looking at non-point sources of pollution and best management practices, when these things are applied, when materials are applied to land and watershed events, is basically what happens with these. So making sure that, well, it's talked about, but it's within the bill, it's number 12, it almost could be a separate bill, identifying existing rules or regulatory processes that need to be changed to develop. Best management practices implied, make sure they're on the ground, make sure that they're enforced is where we need to be, and we look forward to being a big part of that and work with the chair and your committee to ensure this work is done.
Representative Jacob and then Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. So being county commissioner for the last 10 years in Winona County, of course, I've seen literally every one of these fish kills come to the media and play out. And no doubt about it, every farmer in my area, they want to do everything they can, the farmers that I'm aware of, to protect the environment. And they certainly feel like the solution more than the problem. But my concern with the bill is that in life we tend to find what we're looking for. And if we're only looking for one thing to be the problem, and with as many of these kills as we've had, there should have been a very easy connection to say, okay, we found this farmer's chemical in that fish, so there it is. So my concern is just that there's a lot of ways that fish can die. We've heard it, disease, virus, turbidity in the water, low oxygen, intentional or unintentional dumping, runoff, that's not caused by farmers. So my concern is just that we're not looking specifically for one result, that when there's a fish kill, that we're looking for whatever the problem might be. And if farmers are the issue and we can work with the farmers and the SWCD or whatever entity it might be to find a solution for it, I'm sure my community will be behind that as well. So more comments and questions.
Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jacob, I would direct you to Section 2 of the bill where it does provide as part of the protocol the water samples. It does also say that there might be more than one cause for a fish kill. For example, the Rush Creek incident was partially runoff, and a landowner was cited, but it was also partially because the water level was low. And so the protocol would address that and would include the sampling of vegetation, of chemicals, of water. It would have the exact locations. And so that's all well within the 12 various aspects that are part of the protocol development would be all of those reasons that could lead to a fish kill.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jordan, I'm looking at line point 17, and I'm trying to decide or trying to figure out, I guess, is what I should get at. Who, I understand staff person or official, who would that be? And then is there a penalty for failing to report?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Commissioner Meyer would be better positioned to answer that.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Heisman, actually I was just commenting. Representative Jordan and I were talking about this section earlier in the day, and I think it does need a little bit of work. But right now, the way I read it, a state or county staff person or official that works for natural resources or agriculture, I think that really needs to be expanded, and we can work on how that reporting should be. I know we encourage anyone who sees or captures an invasive carp to report that, and actually there was a law, I think, on the books still that requires that. Well, not wanting to put the onus on any one individual, how do we expand that culpability, right? It's you see something, you should report it. This language and the author is willing to work on it with us is I don't want it to be limiting. I want it to be expanding and open so it includes everybody. You can't express a duty of candor in a bill, but to express that citizens should have a desire and not be afraid to report things. Obviously, all of our staff, like every executive branch employee, I would hope would have that duty of candor when they see something to identify it, not only a fish kill, but any other thing that is going wrong too. So I appreciate your comment. Right now, the way it's written, I think it's very limiting. For example, we have 18 staff in fisheries staff in the Lanesboro area office. We have other DNR employees down there, but let's if we want to capture this thing, let's expand it to include everybody rather than a narrow view of it. So thank you for that question.
Mr. Chair, the other half of that question was penalty. Is there a penalty?
Oh. Not the way it's written, no.
Commissioner Meyer.
For not reporting?
There is already a, not for reporting, but there's already a penalty
For violation.
For violation,
yeah.
Of a state. Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's no penalty for not reporting in this, but there are existing penalties under state statute for violating state laws that result in a fish kill.
Representative Jordan. You want to renew your motion that House File 81, as amended, be re-referred to the Public Safety and Policy Committee?
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Representative Heisman, I'm going to try to keep rolling here so we can. We have the testifier, Holly Hatlovick, the administrator of the Renville Soil and Water Conservation District. If she could approach the testifying unit. I would move that House File 1945 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means.
Representative Hansen moves that House File 1945 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1945, members have heard several times before already this year in something relating to the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program and the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Funding. So 1945 provides $9.9 million in the general fund. I think Mr. Jashke had testified previously about we often think of PREP as having a fiscal cap, but it actually has an acres cap. So in the bill that was passed last night, there was money in bonding, but we could also provide additional dollars. And the key point is it can bring back 1.7 federal dollars for each dollar that we spend. I have a testifier who is an awesome administrator. It is Soil and Water Conservation District Day with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Holly Hatlowick is here to testify.
I have Holly Hatlowick, the administrator of the Renville Soil and Water Conservation District. Administrator Hatlowick, please introduce yourself and briefly speak your piece to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Vice. Again, I'm Holly Hatlowick, the administrator at the Renville Soil and Water. So thank you for the time today to testify on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts and our fellow Soil and Water Conservation Districts offices from around the state. I just want to convey to you, you do have the handout that we submitted prior, but I just want to convey to you again in that handout the important role that Solon Water Districts play in the implementation of the RIM program. We are truly the boots on the ground. We are the ones with the landowners out on the site answering those logistical questions, because putting something into a perpetual conservation easement is a large decision, and that is our role, to be that liaison and that trusted advisor. Being in those counties, working with those landowners on other projects, we can help with that transition into a perpetual easement program. So I just want to be respectful of your time and just remind you of those benefits again, that we're looking at filtering sediment by putting lands into perpetual easements and reducing those nutrients that are going to be entering areas of potential sensitive in nature or areas that are maybe marginal agricultural land. This would be another opportunity to put those into a situation to increase water filtration. It's going to increase surface storage of water and reducing overland flooding by taking those sensitive areas and restoring the hydrology and restoring wetlands in the appropriate places. It's, and as it was mentioned, it's going to help us leverage additional federal dollars for the Conservation Reserve Easement Program, CREP, and also the the Wetland Reserve Program, WRP. The other great thing it's going to do is help with sequestering carbon, and it's going to have great wildlife and pollinator habitat benefit. So with that, I would be glad to entertain any questions, and I appreciate your time and consideration of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hadowick. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on the bill? No other questions for members? Representative Hansen, closing comments. And please re-refer your bill while you're at it.
That's good. Take a paddle
back. It's a good bill. I want to make sure we all thank the Soil and Water Conservation Districts for the work that they do.
Amen.
While I didn't hear it, I know that Representative Hansen renewed his motion that House File 1945 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails. With that, members, we're adjourned. Have a great day.